Did you know in the first post-COVID research published on summer learning that it was found that children involved in math-focused summer programs tend to score higher on standardized math tests and have higher math grades than other students? This is the year we follow the research and join the growing number of schools that are ordering Summer Pops math workbooks for their kids. Summer Pops is an easy, low-cost, and effective summer math program designed for elementary and middle schools. Summer Pops is not an app. It requires zero screen time for our kids. Many of our listeners have already ordered Summer Pops for this year, giving their students the leg up that they need and giving their parents the support they want. You can visit summerpopsworkbooks.com/research to view the studies yourself and then request your free sample books. See firsthand why more schools are providing Summer Pops for their students. That's summerpopsworkbooks.com. Principal Matters Podcast, episode 388. Hi, friends. This is Will Parker, host of Principal Matters, the School Leaders Podcast, where each week we bring you inspiring, innovative, and imaginative ideas for your own school leadership. This week, I'm back with my co-host, Dr. Jen Schwanke, author of several great books, including her newest, The Principal's Guide to Conflict Management. By the way, Jen, we've had several listeners who've reached back that are interested in a potential book study that you and I are still kind of like, I think we want to do this, but let's see how much feedback we get, and then we'll make a decision on what that's going to look like. So if you're listening and you're still interested, reach out to me at will@williamdparker.com, or you can email jen@jenschwanke.com, because you head up a new website.
Right, right.
And so you can reach out to either one of us and just let us know if you're interested. We'll send you a link that we have been sending to listeners where we can get more information, because we would love the opportunity, if it works out, to do some ongoing studying together around your new book. But Jen, welcome back to the show. How are you doing? What's some things going on in your life as you step into the late spring semester?
It's, you know, it's that time of year. And I know our listeners are all thinking that. They're thinking, okay, I'm probably going to make it through this year. That's good news. But, you know, a lot of administrators this time of year are in a different place than their teachers are. Teachers are looking to finish the year, right? And a lot of administrators already have a foot in next year. So they're doing both jobs at once. They're planning for a great start in August or September while they're wrapping up a year of good work this year. So wearing two hats. A lot of our listeners are right now wearing two hats.
Yeah, I'm probably say more than I need to, but I just sometimes am that way. But for listeners, you may not realize that a lot of the guests that we bring on Principal Matters are people that we have the opportunity to talk to and record those conversations and bring them to you. Sometimes though, months after we've had those conversations. But if you haven't noticed, I try to slot time with Jen so that we stay as current as we can as we're stepping into the year. But even as we record this at the beginning of March, you're probably not going to hear it till the end of March. And so Jen, you're right. Spring breaks, prom, all those things. As a secondary guy, my brain just immediately goes into every spring sport that is ever going to be happening. And for both elementary and secondary people, from now till the end, it just gets busier and busier and busier and busier. So the topic that we're going to sit on today is probably one that's really hard to have a conversation about in March, but here we go. I want to talk about, how do you know when you're making the right decisions? Because, and I'll start with a story. I remember when I was working on my master's in ed leadership, and I would watch the work of principals more closely than I ever had before, because I was thinking, someday I'll be one. Teachers, and we've all been there, we love to be armchair quarterbacks. You know, we can see the decisions they're making. We're like, I probably would have done it this way, or I would have done it that way. And one of the things that simply terrified me when I thought about becoming a future school leader was like, what it would be like to be on the other side of those teachers when I make the wrong decisions. So I remember one night I went to class because I was doing my master's work after hours. And so I went to school after school, and I ran into a professor who had been a former principal, and he was retirement age. And I asked him, how do you know that you're making the right decisions in leadership? And Jen, he said something to me that I know at the time he was being coy, but this is what he said. He said, "Well, now that I'm at the age I'm at, I look back at my leadership roles and I realize I probably made the right decision about 25% of the time." And He saw the look on my face because I was terrified. And he was like, but you know, over time you begin to get a better sense of what was the right decision, the wrong decision, and it gets better with time. And I walked away from that conversation so dissatisfied because I was like, I wanted the answer. And he gave me what I realize now is perspective. But I wanted to circle back to that question, Jen, because it doesn't seem to matter how long you do the work, you still wrestle with that. How do I know I'm making the right decision, whether it involves students or teachers or decisions about community or even decisions in our own work or lives? So I wanted to start there and I'll let you go first because I'm sure it's a question you wrestled with too.
Well, I do. And I think when we think about decisions, we're always looking for a definitive end point, right? And I think it's worth respecting the complexities of decisions we have to make. And to your point, you know, new administrators or young administrators often just want someone to say, that was the right thing to do. That was it. But how do we know, right? I think about when I chose a college. I chose this college and I left behind seven others. And maybe they were the right decision. Maybe I would be a different person today had I chosen one of those, but I didn't. I chose the college I chose, and I went to that college, and my life unfolded as it unfolded. But it really does me no good to say to myself, well, I 32 years ago, I really should have picked a different college. So to the person who said I made the correct decision 25% of the time, we could spend a lot of time thinking about what that means because what he did is he made a decision 100% of the time, and there were repercussions that felt good 25% of the time. That's what I think he's saying to you is it felt really good 25% of the time. The other 75 it didn't, but that doesn't necessarily make it wrong. And that was that that's to me brings us to that wonderful phrase, you know, no one walks in your shoes, and we should try to get in other people's shoes, but we never really fully do, right? So making decisions, it really is a personal reflection exercise about whether it worked or not. But I think you and I had, you know, when we brainstormed about this episode, we both had some hints, some tricks or strategies. So one of mine, you know, I love this, I talk about this all the time, is just to avoid working in isolation. Even if there's someone who's not in the thick of the work with you or has a lot to win or lose from a decision, just to run the nuance and the details by someone else and say, am I off track here? And really listen to the answer. I think that's one of the biggest steps that we can take to make sure that we're making a sound decision.
I love that. And I think that goes hand in hand with something that I would add to that, which is, for lack of a better way to say it, embracing humility, which is realizing that, and it's weird because you don't often think of leadership and humility as like a companion traits, but humility is the ability to realize that I am fallible and I could easily make the wrong call here. And so if I am susceptible, like any human is, to making wrong calls, then I love that idea of making sure you're not making those hardest calls in isolation.
Well, when you said that goes hand in hand with humility, I thought you were going to finish your sentence a different way. I thought you were going to say it goes hand in hand with seeking the counsel of others. And I was excited because I think avoiding working in isolation and seeking the counsel of others is actually a little different. There's a different outcome from those two things. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
I do because there are, I mean, we could make a list of like decisions in terms of tiers. You know, like there are some decisions that are prescribed in advance that aren't that hard to make. And I'll give you an example. If you have a tardy policy in your school and it's outlined in the student handbook, these are the infractions and the consequences, and therefore you implement this specific disciplinary action. Most of the time, not all the time, most of the time that you follow the process. So you come in, this is the situation, here's where we go. Now, even within that process, there may be a different tier. Like maybe you run into a student whose family has a really difficult time. They have no transportation. So you have some kind of morning before school study hall discipline assignment that doesn't work for every family. And so suddenly you're having to come up with a way to offer equivalent disciplinary action that would meet the need of the student based on what he or she has available in their resources. So maybe it's a lunchtime assignment for that kind of discipline. So I kind of see that tier two decision as, okay, now I have to use some wisdom to determine what's the best option that's an equivalent consequence in this situation. But then sometimes there's the tier three, and I'm just making this up as I go, Jen, in terms of tiers, but this is how it works in my brain. And the tier three is like, oh, situation I've never faced before. Situation that could be very serious for the outcomes of this entire school community. Situation that if I try to just swing it or make this decision by myself, I may have consequences that are far more reaching than just one little incident. And that's when I need to pause and reach out to other people that are experienced in this work and run scenarios by them and get their feedback and pull together and group share, because you're going to have to make some really hard decisions. And those are the ones, sometimes in your earlier years, you do that more often because you're running into things for the first time. But that's kind of how I categorize them in my brain. Jen, what about you?
Well, yeah, that was the distinction I was going to make too. A lot of times as a principal, I would have a team around me. So I knew not to work in isolation. And as we get closer and closer to a solution, I think that's when you reach out to someone who's in your shoes or someone who has been in your shoes and knows all the complications. And you might say, okay, I built my schedule. I have had teacher input. I've looked at all the numbers. We're ready to go. What am I missing? And so I think it's kind of combining the idea of shared leadership with mentor coaching from someone else, and to be open to mentorship and coaching, even if you're really super experienced, is so helpful. There's a wonderful article about coaching, actually by a surgeon, and I'm going to pull up the name of this gentleman, and he wrote about the need for all professions to have professional coaching. And this was an article that ran, I think it was, you know, it's been 10 years by now. I'll send you the link, Will, and you can put it in the show
notes. Okay.
And he said, you know, there are some professions where coaching is expected, like opera singers always have a voice coach, NBA basketball players always have a shooting coach. Teachers, it's totally acceptable. And research shows instructional coaching is so effective. But then he says, oddly, there's so many professions where there's not an expectation or a culture of coaching. Mm-hmm. A surgeon is one, shockingly and disturbingly. So he says you lose precision and you stop getting better once the world thinks you're a master. Mm-hmm. And as I read, I thought, in a lot of ways, principals are like that. It's almost like as soon as you sign a contract, everybody thinks you know everything. And you don't. So you still need to seek out that coaching so that your precision and your willingness to take risks and your end product continues to be refined. All of that is to say, seeking the counsel of others, and that was the word you used when we were preparing, is a little different than not working in isolation. It's asking for help refining your practice. Mm-hmm. And I think that just helps us, you know, not feel like the weight of the decision and whether it's right or wrong is solely on our shoulders. Because all of us, and Will, you've said this many times in this podcast in one way or another, we all stand on the shoulders of the principals who have come before us and the superintendents and the support that has come before us. And to not tap into that expertise seems a little bit short-sighted.
Yeah. Me. So I'm so glad you made that distinction, because not working in isolation, you're right, is different than intentionally seeking guidance. You know, not working in isolation means that I just had an interview with a guest, Bobby Dodd, who, listeners, you won't hear this until later in the summer because of where it's on our schedule. But Bobby leads a really large high school in Cincinnati, Ohio. And he talked about how over the years that he's been there, he has tried to build as many systems as possible for guided feedback from his stakeholders. So students help guide the decisions being made in the school, teachers, and non-instructional staff help guide decisions. I mean, he said he even has students as a component of his interview process where he gives them a chance to look at candidates with him and give him feedback. So those are really good examples of not working in isolation, of inviting the community into the decisions that you're making. But what you're saying is there's a distinction between that and intentionally seeking guidance from someone who's maybe outside the situation, wiser, more experienced, who can then coach you, and I wrote this word down, help guide precision, help mm-hmm. guide your precision in the work that you're doing too.
Exactly.
So, which kind of, I didn't plan to go here, but I want to stay here for just a moment, because when I think about how do we seek counsel that guides us towards more precision, and we will share the link to that article that you were mentioning earlier, Jen. The resource that's been most helpful for me is one that you and I have actually practiced on the show, which is the book, The Coaching Habit by Michael Bungay-Stannier. Because what I have found is that reflective questions, when you're on the other side of someone helping you reflect, it really helps you then get focused on what the problem is. And so for listeners who may not be familiar with those questions, there's seven. There's the kickstart question, which is simply what's on your mind. There's the awe question, which is what else is on your mind. There's the focus question, which is what's the real challenge here for you. There's the foundation question, which is what do you want? There's the lazy question, which is how can I help? The strategic question is the one people hate the most. If you're saying yes to this, what are you going to say no to? And then the learning question, which is what's most useful for you. And Jen, you know, I have those memorized, not in my brain, but on my desk. They sit every day right here when I'm coaching people. Those are the questions I go to over and over and over again. So by giving yourself permission to be on the other side of someone, having you get those thoughts out of your head and say them with your mouth, then suddenly you get clarity. And so I think that could be helpful too.
Well, and since you're talking about questions, let's go down that road a little mm-hmm. bit. Again, when we were preparing for this episode, we were thinking about a lot of the steps that you can take. And I don't mean procedural steps. I just mean things that you can keep in the back of your head, questions you can ask. And I have, every year that I do this work, I get more and more convinced how many answers lie in simple questions. So my team would tell you that. Well, I don't know if they would tell you it was annoying, but it's certainly relentless, the questions that I ask. So I will literally say, okay, wait, stop. Let's think this through. And I ask questions. Well, what do you think? I ask that of the person I'm working with or the group I'm working with. What would you do? What are the repercussions of this decision? What am I not thinking about? What could we be forgetting? What events are we going to cause for other people? Those kind of questions, you know, basically saying, what are we missing? What are we missing? Let's think this through. Those questions can really make people pause and think. I see it in a physical behavior when I ask those kind of questions. When I say, okay, let's think about this. Let's ask some questions. You really can find hidden pitfalls or hidden gems in the answers to those questions.
Let's take a moment to thank our sponsors, and then we'll be right back. Why is iXL used in 95 of the top 100 U.S. school districts? Because it works. Research across 45 states showed that iXL schools outperform other schools on state tests. With iXL, you get a personalized online learning and teaching solution that helps you improve achievement, empower teachers, track progress, and more. This one platform for K-12 helps teachers accomplish what normally would require dozens of other tools. For example, as students practice skills, iXL automatically adapts to ensure each learner is always supported and challenged at the right level. iXL also provides every student with a personalized learning plan to help them close knowledge gaps effectively. One of my favorite things about iXL is their personalized test prep tool. For exams like the SAT and ACT, iXL will analyze a student's most recent score and generate a custom list of skills to help them boost their scores. If you want to take the load off of your teachers so they can do their best work, iXL can help. Learn more at iXL.com/PM today. Support for Principal Matters comes from EduSkills. Are you ready to take your school district's multilingual program services to new heights? Introducing EduSkills, the leading software as a service platform for Title III and multilingual program support in K-12 education. EduSkills, founded and led by former educators, understands that multilingual students are an asset to the classroom and empowers educators to provide an equitable education so that all students thrive. EduSkills' cutting-edge technology and services support large and small school districts across the nation with tools they need to enhance language acquisition, increase family engagement, foster inclusivity, and improve academic outcomes. With seamless implementation and comprehensive support, EduSkills ensures a smooth transition for your district, empowering educators to provide targeted instruction and personalized support. So why wait? Unlock the potential of your school district today with EduSkills. Visit their website at eduskillsllc.com or call now at 405-879-9898. That's eduskillsllc.com or call 405-879-9898 to schedule a demo. EduSkills, breaking barriers and building bridges for educators of multilingual students. Okay, Jen. No. I have to be completely transparent because as we're having this conversation, my brain is already going towards like, okay, how do we synthesize this in a way for listeners so that they can walk away with some really tangible takeaways for from this conversation. And so I want to kind of circle back and just make sure that I'm tracking with you, because when you're sitting down and having these hard conversations or these important conversations, it's important that you have a space where it's safe enough to ask, it's safe enough to get the feedback that you need for the situation in which you're facing, because all of us know that not every person is a safe collaborator, you know, someone that we can reach out to and say, give me some feedback. Am I making the right decisions here? And not everybody has the privilege of working in a large school where there's a team either. So sometimes they're the solo leader in a situation too. And so I'd like you to speak to that a little bit more too, in terms of developing the right kinds of relationships in the settings you have as a principal for knowing who to lean on for those kinds of feedback.
You know, I think it's everyone has something to contribute to question answering. And I've been asked before, I'm just thinking about times that people turn questions on me. And I always find it helpful when they tell me what role I'm playing in that conversation. And I try and do that too. So I think I've even said this to you before. Well, okay, well, put on your parent hat here. I need to know what you think as a parent. Or, hey, can you put on your hat as an English teacher? Tell me what this would feel like to an English teacher. Hey, can you answer this question from the perspective of someone who has built a master schedule before? I need to know what you think. And then as the answers unfold or as that person shares perspective, you can say, oh, okay, so from my lens as the principal, that parent perspective is pretty compelling. Or it's just as likely I would say, yeah, that isn't part of what we're going to consider here. But you've at least considered it, right? Mm-hmm. And I think part of this too ties into articulating and being very clear with the person you're asking what I need from you right now. I don't need you necessarily to break apart my entire process and criticize my decision. I need you to tell me what it is I'm missing from the perspective I ask you to bring to the conversation.
I like that. Okay, let's transition from there then to I'm the leader who's facing a situation where I want to make sure that I'm not isolated in my work. Sometimes I hit situations where a quick run this by a friend might be helpful, or a deeper, let me really get on the other side of someone and have them reflect with me before I take this next step. And then sometimes those, I'm going to call them those tier three areas where you're stepping into like stuff that's like, whoa, this is beyond my expertise or experience. And there could be a lot of those scenarios, Jen. But one of the things that has helped me, and I'm not going to suggest this works for everybody, but sometimes I have to literally get out what's in my head onto paper. And so for me, sometimes that's helpful to make those, to weigh the pros and cons, you know, to look at, okay, if we go this direction, direction A, then this would be the potential consequences and outcomes that would go here. Or maybe we go direction B, these would be the potential outcomes and consequences if we go this direction. You've been friends with me long enough that you know I like to say to people, if you can, though, avoid the binary. And right. Also, and ask yourself the question, is there a potential C? You know, is there a third pathway that's potentially available that keeps you from feeling like you're stuck between two alternatives? And that's not always the case, but sometimes you would be surprised that it can be. So how does creating lists, is it helpful for you, or is that, or what process do you follow?
Where I'll show you my list. Look, I constantly do that. I process through paper, and I know some people process differently, but absolutely. And I think it's, if you're a visual person, I work with a lot of people who have a whiteboard in their office, and I will walk in and I'll see arrows pointing here and arrows pointing there that show the different ways that the decision can go. And I'm glad you said sometimes there's a C. I just had a conversation this morning with a colleague of mine, and we were trying to decide, I'm summarizing here, but whether to post important information on the website yet. We could do it now, and we might create angst and anxiety before it needs to be done. It's about a decision that will happen next year. We could wait until August to post it. So we're talking about that, right? We're like, well, what happens if we do this? What happens if we do this? And then one of us said, why do we have to pick one of those? Maybe we just pause right now and we revisit this every now and then and say, okay, is now the right time? Or because through our questioning and through our conversation, we did feel pretty firmly now isn't the right time, but that doesn't mean we have to go to August. It might be April. It might be May. What we want to do is minimize the angst and elevate the information we're putting out. And there is a middle ground there. There is an option C to get that done. And so it's not, it goes beyond compromise, because it wasn't like we were both fighting for a point and both of us were willing to give a little. It was, hey, there could be something completely different than what we're looking at that solves both problems. Mm.
I want to add one more thing that I didn't put in our notes, but it's something that I'm recognizing is a practice that I've used a lot too, Jen, and it may or may not apply to the scenario you just gave, but sometimes when I'm in a, like, really wrestling with that decision, you don't always have the luxury of time. But sometimes if you're in a situation where, especially you're at the end of a day and you're trying to make a hard decision, sometimes it's really, can be really helpful to go, you know what, we've weighed the options. You know, we think we might know what direction we want to go, but let's sleep on it.
Yeah, right.
Let's just take a pause. Let's sleep on it. And I can't tell you how many times the next morning when I'm on my morning run or getting ready for school, when suddenly the solution comes. And there's something about space and time. And it, that even works in the work I'm doing now, Jen, in full-time consulting and coaching. There will be times where I'm chewing on an idea and I just can't figure out what the right action or solution is going to be. And I've written it all down and I've thought it through, and I'll just be like, you know what? I'm just going to park it.
Yeah.
Because I'm just going to give it space. And then suddenly the space within a day or two might suddenly, I'll give you an example. I woke up yesterday morning and after having chewed on an idea for days that I had just finally parked. And I woke up and just immediately like was flooded with solution. Like, oh my gosh, like so much. I just ran downstairs and started writing and getting, you know, because I suddenly had and I don't know what causes that, but I think sometimes maybe we don't leverage that enough, giving ourselves some pause on hard decisions so that we have a little space to make stronger decisions.
My family does the New York Times crossword every day, and we have contests to see who's faster. Mm-hmm. And I often pause because I get to a stopping point. I'm like, I don't know any of these words. And if I pause and I go back to them 3 hours later, I'm like, well, duh, it makes complete sense. So I think there's some real truth to that. And I'm going to tie that to one other thing. I had a mentor who said to me, she led curriculum, and she would always say, there are no emergencies in curriculum. And she said, people feel like everything's an emergency, right? Everything feels so incredibly urgent, but rarely is it. Now, caveats, if someone isn't safe, it's an emergency. if something requires immediate action, it needs immediate action. But I think one of the things you can ask of yourself and of your team is this urgent? Why or why not? And give yourself that pause, because most of the time you say, is this urgent? Does it need solved right now? Most of the time the answer is no. And so, like you said, you can then say, okay, it's the end of the day. We're tired. Let's sleep on this and let's revisit it tomorrow or Friday or next week or whatever. I feel like self-urgency feels big. Group urgency feels bigger. Both of those are different, though, than real urgency, true urgency. So I think you have to identify when you're feeling frantic or you're feeling like, man, I got to land this plane now. Often you don't. You could just push pause on the crossword puzzle and get back to it in a few hours.
I've worked in some groups that have used this strategy, Jen, that has helped me. And I was talking to a leader recently who was like, what do you do when you have so many ideas, you start getting derailed from the whole reason you're having the conversation in the first place? And you've probably used these too, but I love it sometimes when someone will create a space on a board or the wall or on their notes and they'll say, okay, I'm going to create a parking lot. Yep. And so, cause that idea is one that we're probably not gonna be able to solve right here. So let's put it in the parking lot and then we'll get back to it at another time. Cause sometimes you're right. Conversations and ideas lead to another ones and to other ones and to other ones. And then soon you're just like drowning in all these possibilities, especially when you're working with other people. But let's assume that a leader is stepping into his or her day with humility, not in isolation. They're willing to sit down and reflect with someone on the other side of them if they hit a really hard decision. They weigh their pros and cons. And then based on all of that information, they feel or they discern what they believe is the right decision. Let's talk about that, because sometimes making a decision, once you've made it, there's some important things to determine when you made that decision. So give me some of your thoughts, Jen, on that final step of why it's important when you make a decision to have some, to even have some strategies at that moment too.
Right. I think once you make the decision, and I'd be curious to see if you agree, once you make the decision, you just have to live in it and see it through as best you can. And then there becomes the reflection part, right? Where about 2 minutes after you made a decision, you start thinking, was that the right one? Should I have done something different? And I believe that you can't look back, right? You have to look forward. And that doesn't mean you stick to a decision without any sort of reflection or, ooh, I wish I hadn't done that. You can make changes still looking forward. You can apologize if necessary going forward. I think about a time I was a principal of an elementary school and there was a armed robbery across the street. And it was about 4 minutes that I had to make the decision. So this is actually one that was urgent. And the staff that I had was an assistant principal and an administrative secretary. And I went and I said, okay, here's the information I have. It's across the street. We know the suspect is armed, but we know he's running on foot away from us. What do we do? And we thought quickly, we put the school in lockdown. We started to communicate to the district office, to the police department, and so on. Quickly, the suspect was apprehended. And guess what happened then? We started thinking, oh, what should we have done differently? And what I said to the team was, we did absolutely the best we could with the information we had at that time. And I am going to sleep like a baby tonight because I'm going to know that fact to be true. Given the information we had, we did the best solution. Now, that led to a 3 or 4 hour staff reflection where we talked about what had happened and what we maybe could have done differently and what they wanted from us the next time, God forbid, that it happened. So I think you make the decision. I think you live with it. You own it. You're proud of it. And yet you still allow for change going forward. And I use the word peace, like sleeping peacefully. I think you have to accept that even though it wasn't a perfect decision, it was the right one at the time. You know, we're so hard on ourselves as leaders. We want to get it right 100% of the time. And as your mentor said, that math is probably not very likely.
I love that. So making the decision and living with it. I would add, remembering that You can only control what you can only control,
Right.
because sometimes we we stress out about the things we can't control, like what people say about our decision, or the consequence, the situations involved that are beyond something that we have any control over,
Right.
like student health or their resources or someone's mental condition, all these things that we want to control that are really beyond our control. And so being comfortable with that. You have a thought on that?
Yeah, I one of the most powerful PDs I ever led was last summer with a group of principals in Canada, actually. And they have some really big challenges. And I wheeled over my easel with my flip paper and I said, tell me all the problems. And we listed all the problems. And then I said, okay, we're going to cross off ones that are out of our control. We're going to cross them off. You know what was left? About three things. And those are the three things that we spent a day thinking about.
I
So
love
it was almost a visual reminder that there we cannot. We should not waste or spend.
that.
Spend would be better than waste. Spend time on things that we cannot have any impact on. And ironically, making a decision using the information of what we can control sometimes does have a residual effect on those things we can't.
Well, I want to add a couple more thoughts, Jen, as we wrap up that, we're just coming to me in this conversation. So thank you so much for this conversation, because it's so rich to share these ideas together. But as I was thinking about the things that happen after a decision, sometimes I just want to add a couple more things that I think are important. One is asking yourself the question when you've made the decision, how am I communicating this decision in a way that's still tied to the purpose and the mission of why we're here? Because sometimes we make a decision, but then the question is, how are we relaying that decision to others and tying it back to the purpose of being here? So you may have gone through all of the pros and cons and the list of whys, but for other people on the other side of you, they may have not gone through that process. I call that, and we've mentioned this before, showing them the other side of the moon, being able to let them get into your head a little bit. Not breaching confidentiality or feeling you have to always explain yourself, but just tying it back to, and I'll give you an example with students. So often I would say to them and parents, we are so committed to the safety and the flourishing of your kid in the school. So this decision, even though it's hard, is connected to that mission. So even though there's consequences or we won't see you for a few days, here's what we're going to do to support you and love you and build back trust. And so communicating that decision as connected to the mission of why we're here. And then the last thing I would think I would add is, and this is, sounds really weird to say this, but I think it's important. When you've made a good decision and you've decided, you've communicated it and you're ready to move on, this is where I like to remind leaders, and I had to do this to myself. This was something I self-coached, which was, as soon as that really hard situation's over, then I have to ask myself, all right, now where do I switch my focus? Because guess what was happening while you were managing that really hard decision that may have affected 1% of your student population or 5% of your student population? The other 95% were doing amazing, incredible things that were just flourishing and going on. And that needs my attention too. And so how do I get my focus now back on all the other things that make this school a wonderful place to be? Because if all I'm doing is staying focused on that problem, I have a friend that said, we can't stop admiring the problem so much. And then just in, but focus on that solution once you find it. And so once you've been able to make that decision, try to switch your focus and get on back into other things that are the lifeblood of your school that can keep you motivated to keep making hard decisions. So
Right.
Jen, go
There's a
ahead.
great quote by Emerson. You probably all heard it. And it basically says, look at your day and be done with it. Move on. A lot of noise can get in there in your head, but you got to move on. And like you said, get back to the 99% or 95% of your world that's doing just fine.
And celebrating them.
Yeah.
So when I, so often, Jen, you and I will talk to people in their hard moments. And so I want to just speak to those leaders that have been going through really hard moments right now and just say, you are not alone. And you do face things that are sometimes the most difficult decisions that anyone ever has to make. You manage the trauma in the lives of students and families that other people will never know, the things that you're doing. We had a listener reach out to us this week and just said that she listened back to one of the episodes that we had a couple of times, And she confided through the email that she was crying during that episode, thinking about how hard this job can be. And so I never want to forget, Jen, that the work that principals do every single day, they're so important because they're often the most pivotal moments in the lives of kids and families. Having said that, I also want to say that we also do this work because we're providing opportunities for students and families that they would never get otherwise too. And so as much as people need us in those moments for correction or for support or for love or for encouragement, our entire student population also needs us to see the great things happening, to celebrate their successes at the ball games, to thank them for the talent that they showed at that school play, for a kudos to that teacher that just did a really neat project, for that student that opened the door for a friend and you noticed and you can just stop and say, I just so appreciate your politeness. Those are the things too that we have to focus on so that we're being both decision makers, but we're also keeping our eyes on the product that this school is creating for the community we live in.
Right, exactly, right. And, you know, rarely is a career defined by one decision. Sometimes it is, but rarely is it. It's the body of work. It's the pattern and trend of decision-making. So be gentle with yourself, Principal Matters listeners. Be gentle. It's fine. It'll all be fine.
So as you wrap up this conversation, Jen, I just want to say thank you for just helping me think this through. And Principal Matters listeners, as you're making your decisions, I love what you said, Jen. Rarely will you ever do it perfectly. You're human. But at the same time, you are, you're learning as you work. And so, you know, remain humble in your questions. Don't work in isolation. Seek the counsel of others. Weigh those pros and cons. Make those decisions and then live with them. Because at the end of the day, that's the a pretty trustworthy process for making good decisions. So Jen Schwanke, as we wrap up this conversation, I know both of us are looking at the rest of the semester and even into 24-25, because you and I are both getting invitations to do work and work with schools. So if someone wants to reach out to you for collaboration or coaching or to get you in their schools, how can they connect with you?
Well, they can check out my fancy schmancy new website, jenschwanke.com.
They can, and it is awesome. I told Jen when I saw it that I like it better than my own. And even though I'm proud of my website too, but if you, and I know this is a shameless plug, Jen, but this is our podcast. But if you want to as you look at your 24-25 professional development schedule and calendar, if you're interested in connecting with Jen or with me, reach out. And I'm not saying this to sound, I don't know can I just be real, Jen? I have like over 100 sessions scheduled already for 24-25 and the work I'm doing next year. And so if you want to work, you better reach out soon because there may not be openings left. And I know that as Jen and I work together and as we also attract other speakers and leaders into this community, I'm just so excited about all the solutions available for people. So we would love the opportunity to reflect with you and find out ways we can help. So Jen Schwanke, thank you. As we've chewed on this question today, and Principal Matters listeners, thank you for doing what matters. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, everyone.
You can find free resources like this one at williamdparker.com. Subscribe for our free weekly newsletter, which contains bonus material, and also check out the links for Grow Academies, Masterminds, Executive Coaching, and Keynote Presentations from my books, as well as from Principal Matters Associates. You can find out more under our speakers tab at williamdparker.com. Thank you for learning together, and thank you for doing what matters.